This is CISO to CISO, a live podcast focusing on information security, leadership, innovation, and more. Brought to you by Altitude Networks, data security for the cloud. Welcome, Internet. Welcome, everyone watching live, watching the recording. Great to have you here for another CISO to CISO. My name is Michael Coates. I am the former CISO of Twitter, hence the reason I'm part of the CISO duo here. I'm also the CEO and co-founder of Altitude Networks. Joel Fulton is here with us as well. Joel, great to have you here.
Bonjour. Thank you, Mike.
And this podcast is being brought to you from Altitude Networks. Very quickly, we are a cloud-based DLP solution. So we are focused on data security in the cloud, focusing on platforms like G Drive, Box, Dropbox, etc. And if you've been in an enterprise using these platforms, you've probably seen how quickly you can share documents to the wrong people, make mistakes, get compromised, or maybe even be malicious. Your data is at risk. We have a cloud-based integrated platform to find those problems and help you solve them at scale. If that sounds interesting to you, check us out at altitudenetworks.com. We have a 10-minute integration to give you a preview of your results. With that out of the way, why don't we get started? Joel, so awesome to have you here. You have been in a variety of amazing locations in security leadership roles. You've seen a lot of things. And on top of that, you're an all-around good person, which you can't always say about people across the board. So I'm really excited about this.
Thank you. This is Johnson.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey? How did you start in security? How did you move through the ranks? There's so many different ways people are in the security field. What was yours?
Yeah. So let me start way back at the beginning. When two people really love each other. So when I was young, I was inspired by private eye detective fiction, and I wanted to be a PI. The Raymond Chandler novels, The Confidential Op, all of that was just what I wanted to be. And I've always been a planner, and I know that very often planning takes supersedes execution of work, and I've learned that later in life. But as a child, I was a planner, and so I had it all meticulously laid out. If I'm going to be a private eye, all the private eyes have friends that are cops because they help you with the system. And if I'm going to be a cop, it could be that I might have to shoot somebody, so I should learn how to help them. I should be a paramedic. Best route to be a paramedic, I learned, was to be a fireman. So that was my life plan from the time I was probably 8, is fireman, paramedic, cop, PI, and then I would finally be the fictional character that I'd long fantasized and admired, right? But that sense, that security, solving problems, intellectually grappling with difficult issues. When I first got into IT and tech, security wasn't a thing. The closest you got to it were in actions with the Rainbow Book series. And you remember probably NT351 and its C2 compliant install. And that was really kind of the first bit where we got to touch what is security, apart from WatchGuard and Sonic Wall Firewalls. As Gramm-Leach-Bliley and Sarbanes-Oxley, as these things started to have consequences on businesses, that security really became meaningful. And the problems, the puzzles, the cognitive challenges I thought I would encounter, I did, but I got a double scoop. I didn't realize that security is not about solving a technical, intellectual problem. It's very often 50-50 a relationship problem. Mm-hmm. So that's how I backed my way into the career that I've done for 20 years and have a great deal of passion about and love.
Yeah, I'm always amazed that the first look at the security field from the outside is that is a deeply technical problem and area. And there are certainly tons of technical important elements. But the psychology, the human behavior, the motivational aspects, organizational interactions, that plays such a huge role. And it's almost shocking to your point, like 50-50. It's amazing how much of a role it plays if you want to be in a security leadership role.
Yeah, and be successful at it. I think I've observed, at least let me use myself, when I rely on technical skills, when I have predominantly in the past, it puts distance between myself and people. Leave me alone, I'm working on this problem. And I have observed in my own practice that when that is my chosen step, that distance I put between myself and others causes me to fail, no matter how beautifully I've architected, built, engineered a solution. And that really opened my eyes that maybe I wasn't as smart as I thought I was from an EQ, IQ standpoint. And there's other aspects where I had huge blind spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you've seen security at some big and really prominent organizations. You had a security leadership role at Google. You were most recently the CISO at Splunk, and also some big players before that as well. How did security change across those different environments? What did you find as similarities? And I guess as you look at it overall, how do you think about what the CISO role is? And is it the same in each place?
Yeah, those are interesting questions, because I bet every member participating with us has a different spin and cut on it. And they're all right. So let me introduce some variables that I can map across the roles, positions, and one of those variables is time. If we go back to the cusp of 2000, security was very binary, is very panic driven. Are you Y2K compliant or not? And then we packed a bunch of variables into Y2K compliant. And now when I meet with startups, newer companies are looking at, how do I assess risk? That level of sophistication has grown in our understanding of security. So that's one variable, time and maturation. The other is the vertical, the industry in which some of these were in. So if I start at Boeing, Boeing was built around, organized, and their culture was hierarchical. I'm loath to call it military because they had IDS, Integrated Defense, and BCA, Boeing Commercial, and they weren't all military, but it felt hierarchical. You had an enlisted and an officer class in the management scheme. And so security was very preventive. It was very restrictive. And if you couldn't accomplish your job because of security, that's okay. It was the ruling theme at the time. And I went from Boeing to Starbucks. And it was very much like leaving a base camp and going to a hippie commune where there were no rules. And it was all about partnerships. And there was no conflict that wasn't passive, or many people thought of as kind. So I didn't disagree with you. I would say, so there's another way of looking at it. And we come at it that way. Mm-hmm. And so coming from a very brusque authoritarian Boeing to a very congenial, but also far less disciplined Starbucks, their approach to security was very different. Boeing would see the world as there's bad guys, there's countries, actors who are after us. And Starbucks, I can't imagine anybody, whatever. I mean, we're just good people. We do good things. And so from Symantec to Google to Splunk, that company culture dominates my ability to affect security the way I alone would have thought it would be appropriate. And that situation itself is necessary, because the companies weren't there. I know this is trite, but the companies weren't there to be secure. They were there to accomplish a mission that security ought to support. So learning how to take things I believed were right and effective and subordinate them to the culture and leadership of the company so they could achieve their goals, that was the biggest change all along the path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a similar dichotomy in the culture. I mean, I spent a few years at Motorola, which very big, very different environment than years later when I was leading security at Mozilla. I mean, it's sort of night and day, and fascinating to see the differences. I think, as you mentioned it, where security can stop business in some of those companies, and in others, like, well, get on board, get along for the ride. You know, things are moving either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you see a difference from an enterprise-based security role, like you said, like at maybe Boeing or a Google, versus a security vendor, security company like Splunk?
Yeah, Splunk and Symantec, both vendors in the security space. Symantec is and was wholly a security vendor. Splunk larger, but security is bread and butter for Splunk. And there you have the problem of the temptation of a facade, and both the overreaction to it or the ignoring of it. You know, the old Western fronts, or the what's called a Potemkin village, where in Tsarist Russia, when the Tsar would come through, they'd put up all the fancy fronts and the flowers. And then after he would pass, they'd say, oh, thank God he's gone, and they could tear down the stuff and everything would be okay, back to home. So there's part of that, because you're a security vendor. with an extremely rapid install of your product, solving data leakage in Google Box, Dropbox, mm-hmm. and others. That this podcast is brought to you by my friend. So you can't be a hypocrite. When you approach a company to sell this, you aren't arguing likely or persuading about the need for the service. It quickly moves to, well, now hold on, is your security commensurate or greater than mine? And that is that the integrity of that company at Symantec and at Splunk to say, our customers, let me use Splunk specifically because they did a wonderful job investing in this. The position there was our customers put their crown jewels into Splunk. It is crucial that we protect their data as well or better than they can. Because if their Splunk were exploited, they would also have removed their ability to identify that exploit. So we have to go beyond the customer's ability as much as we can in order to prevent that double occurrence. And it really, in my opinion, depended, because I was under four CEOs at Symantec, it depended on the direction that CEO took. You would have a very strong sales leading CEO, and then you'd have a very heavy engineering led CEO. And it wasn't one was pro more or less security, it was how you communicated what the security strategy were and aligned it with what were now his or her specific goals.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's fascinating to see how that changes across environments and how there is no single universal job description for a CISO or even a universal reporting chain as everyone seeks. Like, that's what's the really best way? Yeah, seeing all sorts of varieties. Now, in a different lens of security, when you look at like what's being studied in universities for security, and then where a lot of innovation is happening in the space, and I guess a third domain of like what are in headlines, those are all very different areas. And you know, one thing I've noticed is that the theory of what we should be thinking about in security seems to differ from like operationally what we're doing and what people are talking about. You know, you see focuses at conferences. Black Hat has lots of great merits to it, but at the same time, I sometimes walk away from them going, I don't need my team to know how to blow up a toaster. So where am I thinking? So how do you think about the differences between practicality, theory, and all of these different things pulling at your time in the security space.
That's great. So I want to be a curmudgeon and say I don't care about blowing up a toaster, but I love security. And I'm not good at all aspects of security. And the more folks I meet that are in, well, as you said, academic research, practical applications, if you grabbed four other CISOs and put them here with us, the five of you would excel in domains where I'm ignorant. And I think that's fantastic. And part of it is because security is so young, codified, cybersecurity is so young. It ought to be one of the oldest professions that we've got. It's been around and the principles have applied for a long time and been demonstrated to be valid or disabused. But we're kind of in an age right now where we're angry at history, and we don't believe that they have anything to teach us, and so we're going to invent lots new. And so where we ignore history, we fail to learn things, but that let's go back to first principles and let's examine these things also does have some benefits to it. So what I love more than anything else, because I've seen its value, is I love the basics, the fundamentals of security. I am not a big fan of flashy. It's great as a hobby. But in terms of what does it really take, what is proven out over time, the basics, time and time again. And it applies in other areas, like Bruce Lee, who said he doesn't fear a man that knows 10,000 kicks, but the man who's practiced one kick 10,000 times. Like that is a, that's a theme. And we always misquote Franklin, jack of all trades, master of none, when what he said was jack of all trades, master of one. So get deep and know a fundamental, and yeah, know a smattering of the others. So I love the academic research because it smells like the future. And so where we might be innovating in a way that's focused on a particular problem, by looking at some of the academic research, even like real simple tip, scholar.google.com. On the left-hand side, eliminate patents, look in the last 2 years, 2019 and recent, and look for your keywords, and then look to see where they linked. And you can follow those thoughts back, and you can build out an academic understanding, and you think, well, why is that interesting? What's really cool is when we're looking at machine learning, and we're looking at natural language processing to reverse identify and categorize data, that work's been done in other areas, and we can cheat. We can skip forward by stealing some of those examples. So I love the theory and the academic side. But when it comes time to cut the fat and really get to engineering, it's good for me to have a partner that's more focused on the practical, because I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really found that as well. You know, at Twitter, what I ended up saying to people was, you know, boring is sexy. Like, I don't need APT. I don't need quantum this. Like, I need identity to work everywhere. And while it's boring because the concept, you're like, oh, identity. Like, I haven't heard about identity enough. Sure. But it's challenging to then do that across all the new architectures. How do you do that with cloud? How do you do that with microservices? Similarly, access control, like minimal access model, that's easy. But in operation at scale, it falls apart real quick. Like, what do you do when people move from one role to another? How do you know if they need to drop those permissions? You can't just do your quarterly audit reviews. We tried those. Those are horrible. I imagine everyone's rolling their eyes, or should be. So they're really boring concepts that are fundamental, but figuring out how you do them at, you know, enterprise scale, that what I have found is super sexy. And not enough people work on it. Please keep making new ideas and new startups on this spaces, please.
Absolutely. If you could, we all want to win a lottery. That's human nature. We all want a magic pill that'll make us sexy, thin, strong, and charming. But nobody really wants to brush their teeth, eat broccoli, and do push-ups every day for a year, because the results are incremental. We want the instant change. And I think that's a human weakness, and that sure falls right into security.
So I want to jump back to something you talked about at the beginning, because we're thinking about how, you know, the mindset of the CISO is working and how they think about different things. You mentioned relationships. So we talked about a few technical things. I'd love to dive into that a little bit more. How do you build good relationships as a CISO? How do you avoid being captured as the no team, or to your point, I think you covered already, like appearing smarter and above other people? Because sure, we know more about our discipline and everyone knows more about their discipline, but how do you fight those challenges and build those positive relationships so you can be successful in an enterprise?
Yeah, that's so there's some rules of thumb. There's some mottos. What if you thought of other people more highly than you thought of yourself? That's a little startling. And so what if in this interview, I thought of you more highly than I thought of myself? You'd know it. You could tell. I would respect you. I wouldn't cut you off or dismiss your ideas. You are treating me as though you value me highly. You're asking me questions and you're not rolling your eyes when my answers go past 3 minutes. And that's a gift, right? And so that gift starts to establish trust. And it's very counterintuitive in security, where I think that I want to be John Wick and go kill all the bad guys and nail everything down and be this iconoclastic, hard-driving. In real life, John Wick's really short. And in security, if people love you, they will go to the wall. They will be your intrusion detection sensors. They will be your first alerts. And people don't love you first. If they know you love them, if they know you respect them, and part of that is if they believe, truly, you're thinking of them more highly than you are yourself, then what they give you back is a relationship. Now, it's not magic and it's not manipulation and doesn't work every time. And that really isn't why you do it. But when people know that you care, people work because they want, instead of because they have to, or you might catch them. And that, to me, others have done that to me, and I watched myself responding, reacting to them. And I thought, now, wait a second, what are they doing? Why am I feeling this way? and asking those questions and learning from them that that was their approach taught me. That's one excellent approach for me anyway, in dealing with other people. And I've had pushback. I've had a very good friend who worked for me. She said to me, when we have our one-on-ones, I'd like to hear more criticisms from you. I hear a lot of things that are encouraging, but I'd like to be like 50-50 criticism and encouragement. And we're close enough, and I know that doesn't apply to every situation. But I told her, like, I'm not your sensei. Like, my job isn't to fix other areas of your life. Let's stick to work. And this is, if I have a criticism, I don't wait for a one-on-one. So it requires, so it's not automatic, right? It's not manipulation or a routine. It's a relationship built on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think to tie back to something you said also at the beginning, where the companies are really looking for success and security needs to be a part of the company's success. Huh. When you're building those relationships and put the first priority clearly as, well, how do we make the business succeed? That really can disarm people. Because I know there's lots of security interactions that people have had historically that have colored their lens towards towards a new CISO or two, you know, an individual there.
And some of those actions were mine. So
Yeah. I think we can all think back to plenty of those times. Like, in retrospect, and what I've learned since, that was probably not the best way to do that. one of the more important things I've seen with those relationship building situations is to establish that you're not in that former camp. And some of those experiences the person may have had were aware, but that's not what we want to do. And by setting up like, all right, well, how can I make you successful? Like, that's really helped people. Because when you get to it, they don't want to do things that are super risky. They don't want to lose people's data. They also just don't want you running at the last minute with some weird technical jargon saying you can't ship your product out of nowhere.
100%. That's so good.
That shared understanding, you know, really works well too.
That is so good.
So for those of you listening, we have one more question coming. If you have questions you'd like to throw into the mix, feel free to put them into the chat and we'll incorporate those as time allow. Sometimes we don't get many questions because we have, I guess, so many wonderful questions and so many ideas that what else could you possibly ask? But maybe you'll surprise us. That's not a question either. So we've talked about a lot of good ideas here, a lot of interesting aspects. Many of the people that are watching these live recordings or the recordings later are thinking about moving into the security world either from the beginning or maybe thinking about one day being in a CISO role. So those are two very different points in a career, but what are your recommendations? How should someone think about getting into the field of security? And for those in it, how do you rise to be a CISO one day if that's your goal?
Yeah, great. Great. So absolutely get into security. It is the best career out there that I can think of. It is rewarding. It is challenging. It also provides, it will fit your personality. So security is not a monolith. Security is intrusion detection. It's working the third shift in the SOC, which honestly, third shift is often so much better. You can grocery shop and no one's in the stores. Like start there is amazing. The whole governance, risk, and compliance, Sarbanes-Oxley, PCI, HIPAA, if you approach that and desire it, you can be amazing at it. Instead of, this is another paperwork processing. In security architecture, in code security and review, there's an aspect of security that will fit your proclivities and your personality. You just add the, you know, I really want to solve a hard problem and help people. Those two things together, I think, and there's something in security that will help you. So how I got into it when I was first looking at security is I went and imposed myself on lots of people in security. I called VARs, I called large companies and asked to talk to the head of security there, which is very often back then the director of IT who was responsible. And I asked for 30 minutes. And in that 30 minutes, I came with a list of questions. And I said, what do you love? What do you hate? What would you have done differently? What's the average day like? What would you switch your job for? Would you tell somebody to get in? I just had a bunch of obviously rapid fire questions. And it not only built out an understanding from all of their perspectives of what security was back then, but it also made me friends. Because they said, hey, if you ever do this, keep it, and we did. If you want to be a CISO, my strong encouragement is, so I believe if you have a why, you can solve any what and any how. And very often we try to solve a what. What are you going to do today? What is your business going to accomplish? And so then we build out these hows, but we skip the why very often. Like if you think back to Shakespeare and in Hamlet, when Polonius is sending off Laertes, he's like brain dumping this last minute parental advice. Wear cheap clothing and don't make fast friends without trying them. And he's giving them all of these whats. If Polonius had given Laertes a why, I want you to be an honorable man, and this is what it looks like, then Laertes could have answered all those questions for himself. So do that if you want to be a CISO. Why do you want to be a CISO? And I can tell you the privilege that I got out of it is I believed I could test the hypothesis that we could connect business and security, and we could stop treating people like commodities, that we could stop treating people like their trade-outs. And that if we built security based on trusting people and caring for them, we could see return on benefit that others couldn't as they were automating, which never really happened. And then several other CISOs that you and I both know, when I ask them, why did you become a CISO? Fewer and fewer say, I don't know, it just happened. More and more say, because this was my goal. And so that would be my number one advice to someone who desires to be a CISO. Why? Get a good why. And if you don't have one intrinsically, talk to other CISOs and create your why and see if it's true. Then go for it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. We do have a couple of questions from the audience. So one of them is, what was your big aha moment about the CISO role within your career?
Oh, yeah. The big aha I had was the CISO role is so new that we're neither accepted nor rejected from the executive team. Mm. So other executives are very welcoming as people, but not really sure, stereotypically, where to fit you in that executive team. Likewise, I haven't had the experience and the education they have had to know how to fit into that executive team. And so the biggest aha for me was, I'm not just here to lead a team, which I learned and knew how to do, but I'm here to represent my team well to the executive staff, and I don't know how to do that. That was my biggest aha. I thought that would be easy. Years spent presenting to a board, presenting is not a relationship. And so that was the biggest aha, the necessity of building relationships, how to build them, and how to get reciprocal relationships from the executive team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very well said. And then our second and final question here. What in a decision maker role for security, what will pique your interest for one tech supplier over another? Or I guess put another way, when you're looking at purchasing technical solutions, what type of things do you think about to evaluate those decisions?
That's a good question. And weirdly, I have a more recent reason for the same answer. I would have told you, if you'd asked me this 10 years ago, the people. The people I'm in contact with, the people that run the company, their integrity, their transparency, their honesty, that matters. Because tech's gonna fall apart, PowerPoints never match the demo, which never matches the install, and I need to know that if I say yes, I've got a human. We used to vulgarly call this one throat to choke. Don't want to choke a throat. I want to have skin in the game so that if I suffer, you suffer, and you're motivated to get me out of it. With the advent, and we've now spent a year with the Silicon Valley CISO Investment Group, as we've met startups, that has been validated from the outside. And that is, when you invest in a company, it's apparently very well known to VCs, but wasn't very well known to a group of CISOs. You invest in a team, grit, persistence, agility, intelligence, because their products are going to pivot. Features are going to fail. And that team is what's going to be resilient or not. The product won't. And so that later on validated when I'm looking for a technology solution, really I'm looking for an honest broker, someone that'll sit down. Anti-stories, a vendor that wants to argue or pick a fight, is not going to work, because they think the product matters more. And if they can persuade the precision of the product, we'd be all in. And what they miss is it's the relationship. Your product's going to change all the time. It's the relationship that matters most to me and to us. So there's my answer to technology selection is people selection. Yeah,
I think that's great. I think that's great. Well, very good. I guess, Joel, before we part, any last thoughts you want to share about any topic out there?
Well, one of the largest problems that are out there right now is exfiltration of documents, data, and email through particularly Gmail, Box, and Dropbox. And I understand that Altitude Networks has a 10-minute to install solution that will demo for you how they can identify where those files are going and whether they're inappropriately shared.
Do I get the shirt? You do get the shirt. I didn't promise them anything for that line, but I love it. I love it. That's great. Perhaps the bigger picture, as you mentioned before, those relationships. Relationships matter. You get things like that thrown in there without even knowing it.
Nice.
This is awesome. This,
Michael. I really am grateful for your generosity doing this. This is terrific.
Well, thank you for your time. There's so many things going on in your world as well, and taking a moment away to jet over here to Paris for a coffee, a group of people that are sitting quietly letting us do our recording.
That was nice of you. Yeah.
Really appreciate it. Yeah, and thank you everyone who joined us live. Thank you for those of you who are watching the recording when that comes out, and keep an eye on the Altitude Network's announcements, both for future CISO to CISO webcasts and also information about our solution for data security in the cloud. With that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you everyone so much.
Thank you very much.